Yeah. I'm right back at it with my brother Jay Dutch. Fresh new trash for the family, what the fuck? My man Big Derek, but we call him old school. About to get up on the mic and straight up act school. Ain't no fiction here, cause we only talking facts. If he's talking about the bucks, he don't cut him no slack. No need to waste time, and let's get right to it. What the fuck podcast, ain't nothing to it but to do it. Yeah. About to turn it over to my man old school with the what the fuck podcast. Check it, yo. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to What the Buck. I am Old School, your host, as always, coming to you live from Valrico, Florida. And it's good to be back on the live show. I want to thank the folks that gave me some feedback, both offline and online, about the recorded content versus the live content. It was good to hear each perspective. And I think each one of those platforms really offers a little bit of a different, a different view, a different lens. I talked to you guys a little bit last week about it in the recorded content. Where with the place that I'm at as a fan of this team, I needed some time not to be excited. It's funny, just coming into the Mixler console here, I saw Pinnacle, who I've known for years, and we chatted back and forth, and his optimism has already got me a little bit excited. And it's funny because sometimes you need to be able to just be down. So it's interesting. You need to be able to embrace your negativity in a way that can be constructive. And we'll talk about that a little bit as we get through the show. But I want to kick things off early. I want to get the introductions out of the way. I want to make sure we thank our sponsors and get everyone ready because we've got two guests tonight. We got Trevor Sikkema from PewterReport.com at Tampa Bay Trey on Twitter. And we also have Stephen Shea at Shea_Say on Twitter to do film stuff on the back end. So we got a pretty loaded show tonight. I don't want to stomp on their time, but I definitely want to make sure we thank the folks who keep us going and keep things going here in Tampa, because once again, and this was not what we had anticipated this year, we all had hoped for far more. But once again, like many of the previous 12 years, the only thing that keeps many folks coming to the stadium on Sunday is our tailgate, which is still undefeated. So I want to thank our sponsors, Steps Towing, who've already signed up as a platinum sponsor for next year as well, Pepin Distributing, Tito's Vodka, Don Q Rum, and Steakhouse Elite. Those guys, as well as you with your participation, have made our tailgate more than just a tailgate. We continue to raise funds for campaigns that matter here locally and abroad. This month, we did our Movember campaign. We were far short of our targets just because, you know, with less people comes less donations. I think we're going to end up at about $3,000, not the $7,500 we had hoped, but that's okay. It's still $3,000 more than they had before we participated. And this is the last night for my ludicrous Andy Reid type mustache, and then I will go back to my winter beard, as it were. Remind you guys that we are going to be doing Jackson in Action for the next tailgate, and we will be collecting toys as well. So if you want to bring those to the tailgate, we'll take care of those. And again, this entire season is dedicated to our friend who we lost in the offseason, our crew member, Richard Zeller. You guys know him as Stuck. We still think about you all the time, my friend. I know this holiday season is going to be tough on your family, but they know that they have us as family as well. So we're still thinking about you, Richard, and miss you every day. So anyway, I want to welcome you guys in the chat room. I want to welcome the folks on the podcast who are listening to this afterwards. What we're going to do tonight, we talked a little bit about this coming into this podcast, and I have to admit, after 12 years of doing this, sometimes it gets monotonous. You guys know, been with me for a long time. It used to be twice a week. That passion can come and go, and I learned a little bit more about why I think some of the folks who do this as a profession seem to lack passion, which was really why I started doing it ages ago. And part of the reason is because it can just get to be annoying as shit. It can beat you down. And I found myself watching that Falcons game last week, and you know, I probably have a little bit different perspective than some based on what I saw on Twitter. This was not a curb stomping. It looked like it. It certainly felt like it early, but the team fought back. That last touchdown, I mean, when you're selling out trying to stop a play, these things happen. That was a one-touchdown game, a one-score game. We can take tremendous exception to the going forward on fourth down, what play was called, why he didn't take the points. These are all conversations we can have tonight, and I'm happy to have them. We're happy to discuss them, and that's why we have the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, thank you for joining. But the reality is we went and played a decent Atlanta team, a resurgent, let's call it, Atlanta team. And allowed ourselves to get taken out of the game early, which we have done quite often, and then fought our way back behind Ryan Fitzpatrick. And, you know, we had 63 people concussed in that game. It was sort of a war of attrition. Adrian Claiborne, who I adore as a human being, who had been going off left and right, was really a non-issue. The offensive line did a little bit better in a lot of ways. We got a chance to see some guys who haven't played, and that's really going to be the story, I think, for the rest of the season. Now, I see Chris in the chat room talks about Mike Evans dropping a TD early on. I am not a guy who thinks that was a drop by Mike early. That defensive back ripped his inside arm down. If anything, it was pass interference. But I'm okay with him not calling it, too. You're going to get contact down there, and I don't have a problem with that. Mike's a physical receiver, so you've got to let the DB be physical on him, too. And I will certainly call Mike out when I think he should be called out. I called him out for lack of yak constantly since he's come to the team. And I don't think he's playing particularly good ball this year. He's not the dominant receiver that he's been in the past. I think that we have absolutely diminished in some way Mike Evans with DeSean Jackson. That's not DeSean's fault, by the way. When you bring in these weapons, sometimes that's what happens. Your primary weapon that was a monster before doesn't have that attention, and it hurts the balance, right? It's a chemistry issue in some way. So no pinnacle. Claiborne did not kill Donovan Smith, and we're going to talk a lot about that with Stephen Che, I'm sure. So would have been great in St. Louis with the wide receiver slide. I'm not sure what that means. So, but anyway, welcome again to the folks in the chat room. But we'll talk a little bit about that. But let's say where I feel right now. And I know, Pinnacle, you disagree with me, and that's totally fine. I definitely want to get your perspective on that. In fact, if we end up going late tonight, we can open up the phone lines if you guys want to call in. I don't have any sort of gating factor tonight to drop this thing early, so we can go long if we need to. In my opinion, based on what I've seen, based on our record, based on what we can put on the field, this season is over functionally. Now, we can be a pain in the ass for a lot of teams. We can continue to build. That's what I think they have to do. But when you see the folks that are getting put on IR, and I'm not saying these guys aren't injured, right? A PCL tear is a serious injury, especially for a big man like that, right? I'm not calling anyone out as saying they're soft or anything like that when it comes to these injuries. Injuries are legitimate. These guys don't want to not play typically. But if you're going to have this many people out and you've already amassed this many losses, and I see Rick H says it feels like everyone's kind of mailed it in this year, that certainly has been the feel in some ways. And we've talked about this in varied levels throughout the season, right? I got you. Sliding. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you very much, Pinnacle. The reference to the sliding was for a Rams reference in St. Louis when Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce played with skirts on. And that's very much what I've been saying for years about Mike Evans. Not that he plays not physically, because he's a very physical receiver, but after he catches the ball, he doesn't seem to want any contact, as opposed to Julio Jones, who tries to turn into Earl Campbell. But at any rate, let's go back to where we're at with the season. I agree, KRS. I think that the fans, the team, the administration, the coaching staff, everybody read the headlines and thought this team was ready to go, just like the Raiders did. Because we're not the only team that fucked up, guys. Let's not get it twisted and think we're the only team who had high expectations and has come in and shit the bed. There's other teams who have done the exact same thing that look like they had all of the right pieces and then got to the game and just couldn't get it done. And we talked about this a couple of podcasts ago. How much negative sentiment would we have if it was just a two-game swing? The two games that we realistically, now three games that we should have, could have, maybe would have won, had a couple of bounces gone the other way, would we be in this Chicken Little mode? And I don't think we would. But that's the difference. That's how fine the difference is between abject misery and jubilation. Right? Arizona was a curb stomping, right? We got our teeth kicked in by Arizona. But Arizona sucks, like you're saying. You're bringing up other teams that had high expectations. KC is a great example. But this season's over. What can we learn from what is left? What is the job in front of us? What does the coaching staff have to do? And I know that'll be a common or a conversation that we will talk about throughout this evening. Who's defending what? I've seen the hashtag dead men walking. I've seen people going after players, going after coaches, going after the GM, going after the owners, which is just an absolute act of futility. I don't understand the fixation folks have with going after the owners. Unless you happen to be a billionaire and would be one of the 80 people benefited by the recent GOP tax bill, since everyone else is getting fisted by it. Shut up about the owners. You can't change them. Hey there, Princess. Hey, Tom. We got a nice crowd in the chat room. It's good to see you guys who are going up to Green Bay as well. I see Bucks Princess and her uncle up there. The Buckaholics are having a big event. I've got to mention that on the 2nd, which is tomorrow. I'm sorry, not tomorrow, Saturday, from 5:30 to 11 at Stadium View Sports Bar. So we're going to be up there as well, and we're going to figure out what we're going to do. So it's going to be good. Winning does cure all, Sin City. I absolutely agree. So we'll see what that's all about. Your girlfriend and you are going to be there, Chris. Great. So we're going to have a good crowd. Now, I've had a lot of people tweeting me, and now I'm getting to the point where I want to not delve into any of the deep topics, because we'll have Trey calling in about a minute, and he's usually pretty prompt. But what we're going to do is, we don't have a tailgate that we're going to. We're going to get together on Saturday night, have some fun, and then the next day, as I find places that we can go, we'll try and meet up as best we can. Flinttown's going to be there too. So we're going to do the best that we can and have a great time in what I consider to be the mecca of NFL football. I went in 2011 when we played there last time. Awesome. Even though we lost, it was one of the games where LeGarrette Blount broke off a ridiculous run where he knocked over 26 players. He was running through guys on the sideline. It was it was entertaining even though we lost, and it was great to go. If you can get there early, go do the tour or stay late to do the tour. It is worth it, I promise you. Absolutely worth it. So we need a new voice. I don't know what you mean, KRS. Let me know. I'm not sure what you're asking about there. I wasn't able to follow the chat well enough to know that. Bucks and Barbecue are going to be there. So all these folks will be there. Nikki's in the chat room right now. She's one of the Buckaholics captains. She will definitely make sure that you guys have the invite for the get-together on Saturday, which I'm hoping will go long enough that I can, because I don't get in until like 9 o'clock, and then I'm driving up from Milwaukee. But hopefully you bastards will stay there late enough so that we can get together and hang out for a little while. That would be a good time. So in a few minutes, we'll have Tampa Bay Trey calling in, and we'll talk to him about his Cover 3 article, amongst other things. So if you have questions for Trey, put them in here. You're doing the you're doing the Dorsey Levens. Cool. I know they do that with a lot of players. Someone else is going to do Antonio Freeman, I think, was doing one. But it is phenomenal. Someone who can bring the young guys to tell them they need to stop reading the headlines. Oh, so I think what Sloan's talking about is we need Hardy Nickerson. We've talked about this for years. You know, me and my man in, I can't believe I can't remember his name, my man in England, it's not Callum. We wanted to, you remember when the WWJD things were big? Oh, we'll talk about it in a second. Good evening. Do I have the big time famous Pewter Report guy, Trevor Sycamore, on the line?
I don't know about those first two adjectives, but yes, the name is correct.
Well, listen, let's not talk about grammar and stuff, because we have people from Polk County listening and they don't understand that.
You don't got to talk about Mark Cook like that, man.
Mark Cook denies Polk County. He keeps clinging to Hillsborough County by the thong that his neighbors wear in the front yard in Plant City. But you're right. He's Polk County just like I am. He's from South Lakeland, I believe. They call that Mulberry, where I'm from, but whatever. Welcome to the show, at Tampa Bay Trey. You have stormed onto the scene in a lot of ways. You've been around forever. You are public enemy number one of Twitter for a while, which is pretty cool. But one of the things that has drawn me to you like a moth to the flame is your analysis and your Cover 3 articles. So I thank you for joining us tonight, and I really would like to talk to you about some of those things. But first, I want to give you a chance to tell us, what is it you're preparing to do as you get ready to go to Green Bay? Because you're going to Green Bay, too. I'm going to see you up in the UP, as it were.
Yeah, no, I definitely am. I'm excited about it. First of all, hey, thanks for having me back on the show, man. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed the last time I was on, so I was excited to have you invite me back. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited. When I looked at the schedule, and I saw that they were doing Green Bay, first thing I asked, you know, the people at Pewter Report, I was like, hey, we go to away games, right? And they're like, yeah, we go to some of them. I was like, I'm going to do whatever I can to get to that Green Bay game. So I'm really excited, man. I can't wait to go. I've got a couple of buddies who I'm flying into Chicago with, and then we're gonna head up to, I think, Appleton the night before. Get there pretty early, so a lot of them get the tailgating experience. But I was told that it is very much an experience as much as it is a football game that you're going to watch. So I can't wait.
It really is. Having been there before, it is worth the price of admission and then some. I hope you get a chance to do the Hall of Fame tour. I've been babbling about that for weeks, telling people to make sure they do it either before or after. It's worth it to sit in Lombardi's desk and put your feet on it and look at the film machine he used and walk through those hallowed grounds. And listen, that's from not a Packer fan. Shit, I'm an NFC Central guy. I hated the Packers, the Lions, and the Bears. But
yeah,
it is impossible to deny the role that Packers franchise played historically and continues to play to this day as an example of excellence, as evidenced by a team that's still in the playoff hunt, led by the incredible Brent Hundley. So there you have it.
Yeah, man. We actually asked Dirk Koetter. I think it was Greg Allman who asked him today if you guys caught the press conference. He said, you played, I think he's coached in Green Bay twice before, maybe, I think, as a coach. Obviously not with the Bucs, but on some previous stops. And he asked him, what's your takeaway from playing at Lambeau Field? And he said the number one takeaway is that that place is just flooded with Packers jerseys, just flooded from the first row all the way to the last row of the stadium. It is just green and yellow. And he said that one of the games that he played, the weather was awful. It was snowing like a banshee. And he said the second those gates opened, people were in their seats. And that's just what it is. And, we've heard Dirk Koetter talk about before, he wants to see all red in that lower bowl and Raymond James and that stuff that he gets excited for. And, man, that's so cool to be a part of that fan atmosphere. And you guys do a lot of that. And I wish a lot more people would do that, too, and just take the fandom. I don't know about, I don't want to say it seriously, because some people, take it a little bit too far, but just enjoy it. Like I've seen you and so many other people do. I wish fans across the nation, especially Bucks fans, would enjoy the passion that they can have for their team as much as Packers fans do. So I'm excited to see it for myself.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. I know this isn't football, so you guys in the chat room, you'll have to deal with it, because we're going to talk about some things that are not football. So tough shit. When I was there in 2011, we were doing the Hall of Fame tour, and a couple of things happened and at the game. And I'm going to tell both these stories. I've told them before, but they're good stories, so deal with it and get a cup of coffee. We were in the tour. Big Nasty, Keith Kunzig, was with me. There's probably six or seven of us going through the tour. And he looked over at the guy next to him. They were looking at jerseys, and he's like, oh, hey, how you doing? Because Keith says hi to everybody. He's just a very affable guy. And the guy chatted with me. He was like, oh, are you a season ticket holder? He asked the guy. And the guy looked at him and was like, you're goddamn right I am. Like, and not mean. Like, it was just like, how dare you ask me? It's like, is your mom a whore? Was like the tone. It was like, yes, I'm a season ticket holder. And that sort of incredulity with which people would look at you if you asked them about their fandom was amazing. So fast forward to the next day, and you're right, the jerseys are everywhere. I watched a guy field dress a deer in the parking lot the day of the game. It was probably 28 degrees the year I went. The houses across the street have Green Bay Packers stuff in the pavers, in their yards. I mean, it's just astonishing. So we're in the game, and we have a family behind us, three generations, wearing hunting gear, nice guys. They are what are called Milwaukee fans, because there's old Milwaukee fans that have a certain set of games, and then the Green Bay fans. So we had chatted with them at halftime. Keith stood up, and you guys know he wears the big helmet with the rhino, and the guy behind him kind of smacks him on the head and knocks his helmet off. Now, Keith is not a small guy. And Keith turned around, and it was going to escalate, I think. And the youngest of the generations behind us said, no, 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 put his hand in Keith's chest, and I've got this. And he grabbed the guy by the shirt, and he said, sir, you're a Packers fan. Act like it. The guy looked at him, looked at Keith, said, I am really sorry. I should not have done that, and picked his helmet up. And that's what, when we talk about fandom, that's what we want to get to here. And it is a long, long way away. So, anyway, sorry for the diatribe. Let's jump back into, let's go to the Wayback Machine first, Trey. Your cover three sure. This week, you tore apart the Julio Jones debacle. And before we get into that breakdown, I want you to pick your high points, low points, things that your takeaways, right? Because I want people to read the article. I don't want you to have to give it all away. And that's over on PewterReport.com. But first, mm-hmm. I want to ask you a question about what your thoughts were going into this after you've watched what we did against this. Was this just Julio being Julio and Ryan being Ryan and them just being smarter, better, faster, whatever? Or did we try and go old school Dungy on this and let them moss Julio and hope that we just could control the rest of it?
There were some elements of kind of both of those things. I mean, like, Julio is the best wide receiver in the game. I mean, like, you could say Antonio Brown and we could go back and forth and all this stuff about, who wins where. But I mean, like, it, when you get that elite, you're just that elite. But I mean, yeah, Julio is the best at what he does in the world. And so, that guy's going to go off, but every team in the NFL knows that. And yet Julio doesn't go off for 250 every single game. So there's gotta be something different. And I saw shades of what the Bucs did against Minnesota and Arizona in what I saw in that Falcons game. And if you would recall, both of those games didn't really go very well for the defense and the secondary. And that's kind of just the way that, you know, I mean, it was the same thing. I saw a lot of, you know, they kind of reverted back to quarters coverage on a good amount of it. You know, even Julio Jones said after the game, he literally said after the game, yeah, they didn't make any adjustments. They just kept playing quarters coverage on us, and we just adjusted and threw against them. And that's exactly what happened. And there are a couple of plays. There's one play that I highlight, and I have some of the video GIFs in there to where you can see the examples that I talk about if you guys haven't read the article. But there's a play, that very first target to Julio Jones, where he went deep down the field. Justin Evans was all over it, and maybe could have had an interception. But anyways, just neutralized Julio from catching a big ball. Okay, that's great. But you noticed how far back the safeties were, how afraid this team was to get beat deep. And so what Atlanta did later in the game is they called those exact same plays for Julio, except instead of running him straight down the field once he got to the middle, he almost like turned on a dime and just started going straight to the sideline. Well, guess what? The safeties had never adjusted. They're already playing way mega deep.
Right.
And Julio just catches an easy pass because guess what? He's better than Ryan Smith, and he's better than Brent Grimes too. So that's just the way that it was. And that's been the story of this season. This defense, especially when something is not working, they do not seem to adjust in game. Now we have seen a little bit when they were on that 5-game losing streak. When they went into the Jets game and the Miami game, we saw them adjust more, you know, get better linebacker play, get better quarterback pressure. They were dialing up different blitzes here and there. They were playing closer coverage a little bit. They were using their strong safety in that box a little bit more. They were being more aggressive. Now they were giving away kind of what they were doing more in the pre-snap, but it was working, and it was working against those teams. And you saw them get two wins. I know Miami and the Jets weren't that good, and this is a different team in Atlanta, but they played scared against Atlanta. And that is, I think, what really came back to bite them, is that, you know, we heard Dirk Cutter say, oh, well, we played 14 different types of coverages. Yeah, I mean, he's right. There were 14 different kinds of coverages, but none of them were more aggressive than in the way that they needed to be. And that's the kind of adjustment that you've got to make. You can't let Matt Ryan sit back there, man. He's the MVP. If you do, he's got the best receiver in the world. It's going to happen all the time. So that was my big takeaway from this film section, is that for whatever reason, Mike Smith continued to just not adjust in mid-game. And I don't know if they know something that we don't, that these guys just literally can't handle the other aggressive responsibilities. But right now, it's just it's a defense that's playing scared against the top better offenses in the league.
It's interesting because this concept of aggression versus passivity is one we've had now for a solid 7 weeks. We don't have the ability to generate pressure with our front four. So we can't sit back in zone and hope that we get to 4.5 seconds to 5 seconds on the pass count. We're only going to get, you know, 3-4 seconds, and the guys are going to be open because we're playing 12 yards off the ball anyway. The offenses we face will take what we give them. Our offense refuses to do that. It's as if Coach Cutter has scripted the entire 67 offensive plays, and damn it be to anything that I see on the field. I'm going to run the plays that I drew up on Wednesday because they're the best plays ever, right? And I watched the other teams come out and go, oh, okay, Ryan Smith, you're 12 yards off the ball. You're going to start in a backpedal. I've got a guy who I can get to the ball in his hands in space, and I only need 6 yards. Right? I mean, this there's a lot of times, and I've always said this, Trey, and I think you feel the same way. Dirk Cutter, Mike Smith, and the guys on the staff, to be honest, it doesn't just stop there. Those guys have probably forgotten more football than I'll ever know.
Sure.
But they look like fucking morons right now. It is absolutely embarrassing what's going on. And that's my transition into the next question, because I know you had an article before. I don't know if it was under the Cover 3 moniker or not, but the huge discussion, which was ushered in by Scott once again this year, is what happens with the coaching staff, right? Is it time for the coaching staff to go, as we seem to change them as often as the girls that Mark knew in Polk County changed their underwear? Is it time for the coaching staff to go? What's your thought now? Because I think that your thoughts really got solidified recently. Where do you stand with the state of the state in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I preface talking about this the way that you have to. Nobody wants to be a revolving door. You know, everybody would love to be the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, you have basically three coaches for 40 years or whatever it is. And even, you know, the Packers are the same way. Nobody wants to be a team that has to revolve through head coaches. But you also have to say after you say that statement, if you don't have the guy, you don't have the guy. And the Bucks did not have the guy when it was Raheem Morris. They did not have the guy when it was Greg Schiano. They did not have the guy when it was Lovie Smith. And guess what? If you, you know, Mark made a really good reference today when we were on the Pewter Nation podcast, and he said, I have a friend who has been through three marriages before. If the marriages aren't working, she's not just going to stick it out just because. She's going to try to, you know, do what she needs to do to find the next one. And, you know, you would hope you get a little bit more better decision-making with each marriage or whatever that it is that that you're deciding on. But with head coaches, it's the same thing. And I'll tell you why. I'm sorry?
I didn't say anything. You're good.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you were saying maybe it was just my phone. But anyway, so I said at the end of that cover three, and I also said at the end of the two-point conversion column that I did after the game, that I don't think these guys survive this season. And I think the reason that they don't survive the season isn't necessarily because of the record. And it's not necessarily because even, you know, they have a ton of injuries. They have that excuse. You know, these guys have – this team has been banged up. You know, they've lost their starting quarterback. Almost when you lose your starting quarterback, that's almost a get-out-of-jail-free card for a coach. But the reason why I think these guys are probably gone is because of what we referenced a little bit earlier. When they have had opportunities to notice when something is not working, and you said it right there, even with Dirk Cutter, that it seems like he's got it. It seems like he's got the whole game scripted and doesn't care what the defense shows him. The failure to self-evaluate when these guys have needed to, or even be able to put something out there different that gives them a chance to win, is why I ultimately think these guys will be gone in the offseason. And that is. If you are making the decision on that, then I think it's the right decision. Because even if your record isn't what it is, and people bring up Sean Payton all the time, you know, Sean Payton didn't have the best start in New Orleans, and yet he's a Super Bowl champion head coach. But you believed in Sean Payton. You believed in the things that he was doing, even the little changes. I don't think that there's a lot for people to believe in Dirk Cutter anymore because of his lack of adjustments. Because of what he's been able to do, not only mid-game, but mid-season. I'll tell you, a couple weeks ago, basically Roy Cummings just straight up asked him, hey, what do you do in this season at this point? This is right after their, I think, fifth loss in a row. He's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you going to do to turn the ship around? And I thought that was a moment where Cutter could be real about this situation and really have the chance to, I guess, turn things around, not only mentally, but actually. And all he could muster up was, you know, we just got to go back to work and keep doing the same things we're doing, keep practicing, and, you know, hopefully it'll turn around. That's not what you want to hear. It's just not.
What is it that you'd want to hear? I mean, because this is an interesting point, and I really like this conversation that we're into, because I love that Roy asked the question, right? But I also wonder when media people ask that question, what do they want to hear? Because Cutter earlier in the year, and one of the things that you and I talked about in training camp even, he has a tendency to be a bit crotchety, right? He doesn't like the questions. Yeah. He's Belichickian in that regard. He thinks in some ways he is, I think, above those things, right? And and I'm not saying he's wrong, right? Having to answer questions all the time, especially the same questions asked 16 different ways,
is a pain
in the balls. So, but what did you want him to do, right? What would your response have been as a fan, right? Put the fan hat on, take the Pewter Report t-shirt off, and put the fan hat on.
Okay. Well, I mean, perhaps, I'm trying to think here because I'm trying to get, you know, I always want to be fair and I want to get in his shoes too. Because even though, you know, things aren't going well and you want to stomp your feet and you want to get mad, you do have to put yourself in their shoes at times as well. And I think that the Cutter could have been a little bit more honest in that moment with where his team is at. Because he doesn't like doing that very often. And when we ask questions of certain honesty, he often kind of either deflects it or just acts like the question is stupid. But I would have liked for at least to hear him say, yeah, we've got to do things a lot different, because he didn't say that. He said, what he said was, we basically have to keep going to work on the same things that have got us here in the first place. And we're just going to keep working on those and hope that those failures turn into wins somehow, even though it's my second year in and all that. I would have much rather have heard him say, we've got to do things different. We've got to get it figured it out. And they have said that a little bit before, but not in that manner, not where I actually believe them. And that's the thing with these coaches, is that I don't know if I believe any of them anymore. And I don't know if I don't think that. I don't know. The players, yes, they play for a team, but they're also humans. I don't know how much they believe in this coaching staff anymore. Come on. I mean, when you make no adjustments, we've already seen Gerald McCoy basically throw shade at the coaching staff for misusing him before in times when they were going through that losing streak. So you already know. I mean, we've seen it from TJ Ward, too. We've seen it from Chris Baker. We've seen it from DeSean Jackson. I just wonder how much they really trust this coaching staff if they're failing to really change, I think, the way that they need to do things. And two, I would have liked to hear them say that a little bit and then mean it. I mean, what change have we really seen this season? Not a lot. I mean, like I said, we started to see some great things from that defense when they started to switch it up a little bit. And then all of a sudden, when the going got tough, they reverted back to what got them the L in Minnesota and Arizona. Come on, man. You've got to trust yourself a little bit more than that, don't you?
Have to trust your fifth-rated cornerback who's now starting. Despite the fact that he wouldn't have gotten playing time if it weren't for the injuries, right? I mean, this is the part that's interesting because I agree. Like, I get frustrated because I look at the things you're seeing. I do feel like some of this becomes emotive and not logical, which hurts me a little bit, but I understand that other people have hearts and souls. I just lost out on those lines, I guess, when I was a kid. Like, me saying I don't believe Coach Cutter and things like that, I don't know him well enough to know that. And when McCoy throws shade because he's being misused, McCoy is the one player you mentioned who I would actually listen to. And that's not because I don't like DeSean or Swaggy or TJ. But they're all three mercs, and they've all three come in here and bitched more than they've played well, right? So at this point, they can all blow me because none of them have developed and put up the performances. Now, DeSean can say I can't throw the ball to myself, and he's not wrong, right? But Swaggy gets burned. TJ gets burned, and TJ then gets burnt when he's on the field, even though people want him out there. You want to come over here and say you're a leader and a Super Bowl champion, and you're going to change the secondary that sucks right now? Then how about you do that and don't get outplayed by a rookie and three journeymen? So I know you've got to be around these players all the time, and I like them as human beings. Many of them I get a chance to know, but it's amazing that we can all sit back as fans and pseudo-analysts, and in your case, a real analyst, and make this soap opera. If Dirk comes out there and goes, like, I hate right now when he throws players under the bus. Coaches don't throw players under the bus. That does no good. And I know fans, be honest, tell me when someone misses an assignment. Fuck you. He doesn't owe you that. That locker room is sacred ground. You criticize internally. You know, I don't know what we're looking for, Trey. I think is what I'm trying to say.
I don't necessarily disagree with the motives of why you have that perspective, especially, you know, of the guys that have come in and maybe they're not performing right. But on the other side, I'll just give you, you know, the flip side. This defense is obviously, I mean, I noticed early on that the defense was extremely soft and that this was going to continue to happen, and it did. And then I kind of heard the new guys in the team who have been on other teams that have had other kinds of defensive success come in and go, I don't really know what's going on here. And I was like, yeah, I don't either. So I think there's some merit to that. At least I have to think so. But again, I know they can't really be as honest to us as maybe they want to be, because I'm definitely with you there. You handle things internally, and I get that. And I wasn't looking for Cutter to throw his guys under the bus, nor Mike Smith. I mean, they're giving the right answers. They're doing the right things. But I don't know if they're honest with themselves enough.
Right.
And I guess that's probably my thing. I don't want Cutter or Smith to be maybe as honest as, like, saying that it's the player's fault or throwing the players under the bus. But I wish that they were more honest with themselves, because you can sit here and say, you know, Mike Smith says every week, you know, it's on me. It comes on me. It's all this. And I, not that I don't believe him, but, like, dude, at some point, yeah, it's on you. Change it. Like, you did the right things. You changed it a little bit. Why didn't you stay there? You know what works. You've seen what works on your defense. So why all of a sudden did you think that when the competition got better that you wouldn't be able to do what worked for your defense? Maybe your defense is not what originally you thought it was at the beginning of the year. Maybe this is not a quarters zone defense kind of team. Maybe it is more of an attacking style, a three down lineman thing, because guess what? When you play that, it worked, and it would have worked against Buffalo, and this team would have one extra win if they didn't play the 3-3-5 with the worst spacing I've ever seen for a three down lineman.
Right.
They would have won that game.
Right.
So all of a sudden, like, I just want the coaches to be more honest with themselves, I think, is my thing. You know, when it comes back to adjustments and game plans and everything, you can say what you want to at that podium, but I did not believe them. So there you go.
I understand. And I think it's one of those things where, and you just hit on it, and we've talked about it in passing as well in the chat room and in on multiple Twitter threads. If two games were different, right, two losses were wins because we legitimately could have had them, how you know, close to the edge would the fan base be? How close would the coaching staff's necks be to the chopping block? Right. It really is that the difference really is that fine, you know? And,
sure.
And I agree with you on the defensive side. We watch each other on Twitter during the game. I'd rather die by the sword, man. You cannot die a death of a thousand pricks. And you can
yeah.
take that however you want, right? But, I mean, go out there and be aggressive. And I don't care if it's Ryan Smith, because I agree. I agree with what you're saying. I think I know what Coach Smith is thinking, which is, holy shit, I can't play press with this kid. There's no way I can do this. Yeah, no, you can. He knows how to do it, right? And I'd rather him get beat that way. I'd rather create a tougher throw for Matt Ryan for the 3.5 seconds he's going to take than allow him to play pitch and catch in a 12-yard gap.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, yeah. No, and actually, one of the better coverages that Ryan Smith had on Julio was, I think, his last reception of the game, which was they finally just threw their hands in the air and said, okay, go press him. And
right.
Ryan Smith pressed him and actually did really well. Julio just turned on a dime, and it was like no corner in the NFL was going to stop that catch. But Ryan actually did a decent job on him. So, yeah, I mean, and you know, even shadowing Grimes on Julio, that never happened.
Right.
He never thought of that. And it's like, look, man, whatever defense you maybe thought you had in the preseason probably is not the defense. It's clearly not the defense that has been the most effective this year. So do something about it,
yeah.
you know? And
yeah.
these last five games, I guess, are experimental games for him. You know, you might as well throw it all out. I mean, there's nothing. You can't play scared anymore. There's nothing.
What
there's
to be scared
to
of? Right.
Yeah.
I tweeted out that stupid Dan Fouts thing, right? They're putting it on the line today. They've got nothing to lose or whatever from the water boy. Because you're right. I mean, what the fuck are you trying to defend at this point? You know?
Yeah.
And with the guys who are hurt, get them healthy. Like, I totally am down with that. And I think there's a healthy debate about whether Jameis should play. I know you and I don't have time to chat about it tonight, but I like the debate that's going on. I don't know why people are incensed by the possible suggestion that Jameis should sit. It's not because anyone doesn't think Jameis should play. But the reality is, I want to see if this offensive line, in my mind, could do something crazy. It could be better than the one that got sat down. And that's not because Alan
mm-hmm.
Marpet and Damar Dotson are not studs, because both of them are. But an offensive line is five guys working together, not five individuals
sure.
on the field at the same time. And that's what we've played with all season long. So we'll see. Now, Trey, listen, I know you've got extensive, as I mentioned, grooming rituals you've got to handle with that bunny ears. I want to make sure I get you out of here on time. Your travel issues are probably important. Hopefully you're taking the train up from Chicago. Or are you driving?
I am flying to Chicago, and then I think we're driving up there. I don't think we're taking a train.
The train is actually a good gig if you can get it. It's like a $40 train ride. It takes you to like the heartland. It's really kind of cool, and they can rent a car in Milwaukee from there. But anyway, it's a good time regardless. I want to thank you for joining the show, and thank you guys at Pewter Report for all the good work you're doing. Your new podcast is great. People are enjoying it tremendously. Your Cover 3 article is phenomenal and something that people should read if they're not. You may need to put some more visual aids in for some folks because the narratives continue despite the just copious amounts of tape that exist that would squash them if anyone bothered to read them. Tell people how they can follow you and get more Trey in their life, as it were.
Yeah, man. Like you said, pewreport.com. That's where you can find all my stuff. I do that weekly Cover 3 column that comes out every Tuesday or Wednesday if you want to check that out. And then, two, I'm pretty active on Twitter. I'm interactive with Derek all the time. I basically interact with anybody who wants to interact with me at Tampa Bay Trey, T-R-E. It's basically where I live. But, yeah, Derek, thank you so much for having me on. I always enjoy this stuff, and I'll see you in Green Bay, my friend.
Yes, sir. We will have a beverage of some sort there. And one day I'm going to get you out to the studio where Mark used to come every once in a while before he moved to the other side of the universe, and we'll have some fun in the studio.
Yeah, it's got to happen, man.
All right, brother. Take care. Tampa Bay Trey, Trevor Sikkema from pewterreport.com. Cleared off the line just in time to free it up for Stephen Che, who will be joining us talking more film. I want to thank him for joining. I already asked. Sorry, we had a little bit of a hold on a second. Reaction to Daquan Bowers getting drafted. Bucks and Barbecue has been on fire in the chat room. Thank you guys who are over the hipstercat.org. Thanks, Pinnacle. Well done. Trying to catch up with you guys in the chat room, make sure that I got all the things you wanted done. But enjoy him joining the show. And again, that cover three article I think is phenomenal. So we've got Stephen Chay calling in next. We're going to talk about his film review. He spent a lot of time looking at the offensive line, and almost as if I've been doing this for 12 years, I just teased a discussion about the offensive line, which the trenches are where we have lost this season in many ways. With the return of the beard, who you guys know I have an unabashed man crush on, Joe Hawley, I honestly think there is a non-zero chance that this offensive line will perform better. And I know that is going to sound just like heresy to most. But holy crap, he got in and he already changed the demeanor. Now, what's funny is Pinnacle is, and a lot of people are, I think, rightfully on the J.R. Sweezy is a huge mistake bandwagon. And by his play, I think he has been. He has not been what he was supposed to be. But it's interesting how when you add someone like Hawley to the lineup, other guys elevate their game. Here's Stephen Chay calling in right now. Good evening. Is this Mr. Stephen Chay?
It is. Yes, sir. How you doing, Derek?
Good, man. Good to have you on the line. I want to thank you for calling in. And I'm excited I get to see you this week, too.
Yes, sir. Yeah, excited to finally meet you in person.
This is holy. This is going to be an interesting group. I don't know how far away we've all had to go to actually meet each other. But, you know, I was just talking to Trey on the show. He's going to be there. His old roommate from college, who I'm sure has tons of dirt on him. We've got like 40 Buckaholics from various places meeting on Saturday night. I hope you saw that on Facebook. If you didn't, I can make sure we get that information to you from
audio cut out.
Nikki. Oh, you good?
Hello?
Yes, are you there? Steven, are you there? We are having technical difficulties, ladies and gentlemen. As I have just completed a successful call with Tampa Bay Trey, I'm going to blame Steven for this. So we'll let him call back in, and then I'll make fun of him. Hey, Steven. Can you hear me now?
Hello?
Steven, can you hear me now?
I have an audio trouble. Hold on.
All right. Wow. That's strike two. He gone, Flint Town. I know. Pinnacle says, remember, Mankin sucked in his first season, too. No, I get... It's a good point, actually. I was going to say I get your point, but that doesn't matter. It does matter. Because this is his first season. He's coming back from injury. It's his first season in. I think the thing that we used to hear about Mankins that we don't hear about Sweezy, and maybe it's true, and we're just not hearing it, right, is what a leader Mankins was in the locker room and what he was doing for the other players. And we haven't heard that same thing about, I think you're right, Kurt, by the way. I think you're absolutely right because his audio levels look fine on my side. But J.R. Sweezy has not elevated the offense, and that's a problem. So I think that when you see guys, you know, DeMar Dotson's been playing at a great level, but I think that you've got to get five guys who are trying to play together. So, Rick H. Talking about the receivers, which is good. It's interesting. I had those on my list. I think Steven's probably rebooting his computer. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing, but we'll give him time to do that, and then we'll get into his questions. The big changes or the big questions that I've got coming in here are really about coaching. But the point that Rick H. is bringing in here, Mike Evans has not been himself. We talked about it a little bit at the beginning. Humphreys, again, and Rick, you're absolutely right, has not been himself. Here's Steven calling from a landline. Hello, Steven. Have you tried a different phone?
Yes. I'm using a cell phone now.
Awesome. And now I can actually, you can hear me.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. No worries.
Yeah.
It's all
yeah.
good. So we have Steven Chay at Chay_say on Twitter. His film reviews are the thing of legend, one might say, if one were being heavy-handed. I want to thank you for joining the show tonight. And
Absolutely.
You couldn't respond before, but I was reminding you, we do have a get-together that the Buckaholics have set up, Bucks Princess set up for us on Saturday night. So if you're going to be up there early enough, we're going to be some... where's the name of the place? Hold on. I've moved my papers too far. Stadium View Sports Bar from 5:30 to 11. So if you're on Facebook, let me know. If not, I'll send you the link. We're all getting together there. We're going to have a big group of people up there. And fans, despite this being an absolute dumpster fire of a season, continue to follow this team around like a band of vagabonds and continue to cheer for them as we get beat to death in various fashions. Now, you did a lot of work on the offensive line this week, Steven. I'd like you to tell me a little bit about what you see, and then I'd like you to take what you saw and project it onto the players who you think we may see this Sunday.
Yes. So the good news is Evan Smith is coming back, even though Ali Marpet, who else was out? Who went on IR?
Damar Dotson.
Damar Dotson, right. So Caleb Benenacht.
Correct.
He actually had my favorite play of the week. I mean, he played very few snaps. Dotson was in and he was out and came back in really brief. So he was out. He missed very few snaps. Caleb came in and did a really nice job. He had the play of the game in my eyes just from watching film. He popped out in terms of a sweep to the right. He came from the guard position. He was pulling. And just did a terrific job taking out DB. He had limited snaps. He played mainly as an extra tight end, but encouraging. He's, I believe, a second-year player. Interested to see what he can do in a more expanded role. Evan Smith, he's going to be playing, I would assume, at he's going to be rotating in, obviously, at left guard, which he's done with Kevin Pamphile, who had a kind of a rough game against the Falcons. He had one really nice block on the screen, but he got beat a few times. Joe Hawley played a few snaps for Marpet against Atlanta, and he was effective. And, you know, he is the classic, you know, mix it up guy, plays through the whistle. J.R. Sweezy did a nice job. I highlighted that a few times where, you know, he is looking for a fight. And anytime there was a play that was not fully blown dead, if it was, you know, Mike Evans post that, you know, he was standing up in, or there was another play, a run play where Sweezy came in late to kind of push the pile forward. He is kind of that effort guy, even though he may not be the best pass protector. He does like to mix it up. So if Joe Hawley's back, I'm starting at center this week, I would expect to see a lot more of that chippiness, which is, it will be refreshing.
Well, it's funny because I love the idea of Hawley and Sweezy on the field, because we haven't gotten that. We miss Joe Hawley. And it's not because I think Joe Hawley is a better center than Ali Marpet, because I don't think that's true. I think Ali is more physical. I think he's overall a better player at center. I think Ali is still a better guard than he is a center, but he's still the best center we have. And none of that should be offensive to any of the players being discussed. If Joe Hawley's dad is listening to the podcast, which he does. That said, when it comes to offensive line, you need those big guys dancing together and working together. What I'm intrigued because of how much you focus on the offensive line. What did they do well last week that they haven't done well before? And how, you know, the question from Kurt McDonald, how is it that this group that ostensibly should have been an upgrade across the board has regressed so badly? And why do I want Coach Warhop fired so badly? Just answer those questions. That's all.
Yep. So the thing that's been puzzling to me, and I think a lot of other Bucs fans, just the rotation at left guard. Last year, Kevin Pamphile had a pretty good year by all accounts. He was a late round pick. I want to say he was like a fifth round pick. A few years ago, got his chance last year to start, did a pretty good job at left guard. This year, he was kind of injured through camp, and there was there has been a rotating door at left guard with him and Evan Smith playing almost 50-50 snaps every game. Evan Smith has missed the last two with a concussion, but he'll be back this week, so I would expect to see a similar type of rotation. J.R. Sweezy missed, you know, he's a big splash free agent signing. A few years ago, missed the entire last season, so didn't really play. Complete, you know, chemistry change, and also the emergence of, or I don't want to say the emergence of, but this line has not been healthy together. The healthy line is probably what you're seeing right now. Damar Dotson was really in and out of the lineup last year with health issues. And then, you know, the emergence, I want to say the emergence of Donovan Smith. He's been probably the most inconsistent player besides Jameis. And I don't want to, you know, speak poorly on the people's quarterback, but
look at that.
But he's been up and down this year for sure. But Donovan Smith almost weekly has been good one game, not good one game, good one game, not good one game. And he's actually strung together a few, I almost want to say great performances the past few weeks. And I'm actually really encouraged going into this week. I'm actually one of Donovan Smith's biggest critics, not because I personally dislike him, but just the inconsistency is really tough from a key position at left tackle when you're protecting your quarterback's blind side. Jameis obviously has an injured throwing shoulder. That's a big area of need, and I felt that he hasn't been very consistent this year, like the rest of his career. But he's really strung together a few good games. Last game, I tweeted before the game that it was going to be a big measuring stick game for him. Not that Adrian Claiborne is, you know, Simeon Rice, but he did have a 6-sack game against a backup, Tyron Smith's backup, a few weeks ago. So he can obviously put it on guys that are not good. So I was really interested to see how Donovan would perform against Claiborne. And he dominated the matchup. I mean, Adrian Claiborne had one really nice play where he kind of knocked Smith on his butt. But aside from that, Smith didn't allow a pressure by my charting. Did a really nice job. What was most encouraging, not that he, you know, allowed very few quarterback pressures, was more the fact that his technique looked a lot better. He wasn't lunging. He wasn't reaching. He was moving his feet. He looked like he was in shape. It looked like he was understanding his body, if that makes sense.
It does.
He's such a large person with an enormous wingspan that is very advantageous for the left tackle. So it looked like it was finally starting to click. So I'm hopeful that that kind of continues this week in Green Bay.
Well, it's interesting to see. And this is something that I think that as you continue to view the film on the offensive line is so much about fundamentals. You talked about his footwork, mm-hmm. and especially for your tackles, their initial steps, whether it's a kick step out in pass protection or whether it's a drive step in zone, whatever it happens to be, if their feet are wrong, they're wrong. The play is almost over before it starts. Then the punch is the next question, right? And when you saw, like, some of your reviews, you showed guys getting ripped through. And typically they do what I used to call when I coached offensive line, Frankensteining. They throw their punch out too early, and they extend their arms. If you do that, the defensive lineman will own you and embarrass you and then run back and embarrass you again. And at the NFL level, I don't know how that happens. Like, I get it at high school. I totally get it even at college, especially if you're in a college that doesn't have, like, Wisconsin or Stanford traditional offensive line, right? I get that to a certain degree. But for fuck's sake, you're in the NFL. You've had a decade plus of tutelage, really good tutelage, ostensibly, on how to do this. How is our offensive line coach still employed?
Yeah, it is it's tough. It looks like, you know, taking Donovan Smith's last two or three games out of it doesn't look like guys are improving that much. You know, you see Marpet, who, started off a right guard and, you know, has been really solid there, moved to center. And he's definitely getting better there, but he had a really tough first quarter of the season, I want to say, where it seemed like every third down snap, he was putting it on the and rolling it back to Wentz and putting it on the ground. I would rack that up almost as much to nerves and getting ready to, you know, get his head up and snap it back and, you know, block the defensive tackle. But nobody's really developing. Like J.R. Sweezy, you would really like to see a little bit more out of him. I think he's had kind of a disappointing year. Tamar Dotson has been pretty good this year, which has been encouraging. But at the end of the day, he's our oldest lineman and probably is not the future of this team going forward much longer. The left guard is really troubling. Evan Smith is kind of an old veteran who you can kind of plug in if needed. Really disappointing year out of Kevin Pamphiel after what was a really encouraging step forward last year. So you'd really like to see some continuity on the line so they can kind of grow together as a unit.
All right, we will move off of the offensive line because all it does is piss me off. I appreciate you doing the video work of it. I know that Bucksby Podcast, Chris, wanted you to talk a little bit about Grimes. I don't know if you have any other folks you want to focus on, because I really want you to have an opportunity to tell the listeners here and who listen to the podcast afterwards, the millions around the world, what it was that you saw that people should be encouraged. So let's set up like this. Who were you most surprised / excited by what they did on film? And then the flip side, who was it that you were like, Jesus, what the fuck, right? And you probably wouldn't say that because you have more class than me, but you know what I mean.
Just in the Falcons game?
Let's do Falcons game first, and then in general, let's do to the year, to the season to date second.
Okay. Most encouraged by definitely Donovan Smith. Most disappointed by, I would say Kevin Pamphiel. Again, I know it's kind of sticking on the offensive line. If we go kind of outside that, I thought Justin Evans had a really good game. He's really shown that he is going to be an impact safety for this team for a long time. He's got, like, tremendous range. There was the one play that everybody saw that was the play action to Julio Jones early in the game. The Bucs, I don't recall the exact coverage they were in, but Justin Evans, I looked at the play a few times. Justin Evans didn't make a false step on a play action, played the post perfectly, didn't take a false step, was right in there, stride for stride. Julio competed at the apex of the ball. It ended up being incomplete, so, you know, great job by him. There's another play where he came down on a wide receiver screen and got a tackle for loss. So just think about that. A safety who was not playing in the box got a tackle for loss on a pass play. That kind of speaks to this guy's range and just how quick he is. And coming out of school, the big knock on him was, he's, you know, has great size, he's got good range, but he misses a lot of tackles. I honestly haven't seen very many missed tackles from him. I mean, he's a rookie, so he's going to miss, you know, one here and there. But from looking at tape, I haven't seen him miss a lot of tackles like, I don't want to say Chris Conte, but Chris Conte doesn't miss a ton of tackles, but he doesn't drive ball carriers back. He typically is more of an ankle tackle
guy. He catches. Yeah, he catches. He doesn't drive through. Fair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I haven't really seen too many of those, which is really encouraging. I thought Brent Grimes did have a good game. I mean, we can talk about it. I know Chris and I were kind of going back and forth on Grimes, and, you know, I definitely understand his points a little bit more after seeing some of his cut-ups, which I appreciated. I think Brent Grimes is having not as good a year as last year, but as far as value for this team as a number one corner, I think he presents great value despite, you know, he is an older player. I think he's 33 or 34. But, you know, he signed on the team for 2 years at $13.5 million. I think he had an extra $1.5 million each year for, you know, incentive bonuses. And for, you know, $8 million a year, basically with bonuses, I think he's been a steal of a player considering, you know, the top, if you were to get franchise top five corners, make a little over $14 million a year. I think he's a really good value. At corner, I think he's had a pretty good year, albeit not as good as last year. And you can say what you want about him, but the guy makes plays. You know, he had the interception against McCown a few weeks ago. He had the big fumble recovery this week, which, you know, was not the cleanest fumble recovery. It was kind of a bouncing, wobbly ball. He can make plays. He gets the ball in his hands and can kind of do something with it. So I do really like having him on the team. As far as other disappointing player, I was really happy to see Will Golson back. Will Golson, honestly might be my favorite player on the team. And it was really good to see him back after that, scary injury a few weeks ago.
What was, now in your film work before the scary injury, and everyone, you know, everyone's heart was in their throats. I like Will too. He's a good kid, works hard. Yep. He deserved the contract. He played his way into the contract. But one of the things that's had me very frustrated this season is I don't think he's played up to the contract early on. And so it was good to see him getting the penetration, getting upfield, because he's an interesting hybrid player. He is not your Noah Spence, prototypical speed, a guy that can go out to a wide nine and get around the edge guy. He's not the bend guy.
Yeah.
But he is, I don't want to say this because people will take it the wrong way, he's more Michael Bennett than he is that. That's not to say he's as good as Michael Bennett was when he was here or as good as Michael Bennett has developed in Seattle, but he has no problem setting an edge. He has no problem if you have him going after the quarterback to try and create pressure. He really is a Swiss Army knife. What the hell has happened, and are we going to get more of the good Will Golson?
I hope so. If you're looking at stats when you're looking at Will Golson, I don't think that you're going to think he's a very good player.
This is the wrong podcast to think that we're just looking at stats. There's plenty of other podcasts that do that.
Yeah. But yeah, he's just a run stuffer. He's a two down defensive lineman, which is tough, you know, when, you know, it's a passing league. He's going to come out of the game on every third down. I mean, they can put in guys like Will Clark and Ryan Russell, who are going to be better at rushing the passer on third down in obvious passing situations. The only time we'll see him in the game on third down is it's like third and one, maybe, and the Bucs are expecting a run. But there was, when you looked at the tape from 2016, there was an enormous enormous drop off when he got hurt. He got hurt, I believe, in the Dallas game. And then Dallas really just ran the ball all over Tampa after that. And then the next game against New Orleans, I believe he missed, and they kind of ran the ball down our throats too. I think the purpose of re-signing him at like a fairly friendly cap number was to ensure that, you know, that wouldn't continue to happen, and the Bucks could be good against the run. And the Bucks really started the year off very well against the run, but kind of tapered off after the first quarter of the season. And that's kind of when their slide happened. He hasn't been as productive as you would have liked. It is really tough for the Bucks to the Bucks are a little bit handcuffed in the fact that, and I believe Peter Report had an article on this a few weeks ago, that they have a lot of specialists. Like Noah Spence is almost a specialist pass rusher. He's still a little bit tiny to play the run, and when they run directly at him, it is a problem. Will Golston is a specialty defensive end that he really just stops the run. You really can't count on him for, you know, anything more than two fluky sacks all year.
I honestly think we're underselling Will Golston's ability to rush the passer. Last season, he showed he had the ability. I think he is Adrian Claiborne-like in that regard. Not the six-sack Adrian Claiborne, but the regular Adrian Claiborne, who's good for six-ish, you know, six and a half around there, because he's going to get upfield. He's going to make sure he keeps leverage. And then if the rest of the line does their job, and this is the thing we're doing a shitty job of, and I want to ask you, Steven, what you're seeing on film, because a lot of people are taking umbrage with Gerald McCoy shooting inside gaps, which looks surprisingly yep. like what is supposed to be an inside tackle twist that never happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what it is. We don't know the play call, so it's hard to tell.
Right.
But like the offensive line, now that we're on the defensive line, those guys have mm-hmm. to work together. So if Will Golston's responsibility is to get upside, outside edge leverage, right, then mm-hmm. if the rest of the line can push the quarterback and the quarterback folds in, he can fall into it. It's a dance, right? They collapse into the quarterback as he tries to climb the pocket. Will mm-hmm. Golson's just there. But what we yep. have is, again, a set of four or three or five or six guys who just seem to be running around. They don't seem to be running around together with a plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the last few weeks, we have seen far less of the stunting from the front four, which is refreshing because, you know, those – do take a lot longer to happen. And a lot of times you're using Gerald McCoy, your best pass rusher, as the decoy to bring a looper around, which, you know, often was not working. More recently, they've gone to nickel 3-3-5 and other things to get their best personnel on the field. And when I say their best personnel, I mean the strength of this team defensively is their linebacking core. Quan Alexander and Levante David are fantastic players. Kendall Beckwith has really flashed and shown some good things this year. So they want to get those three on the field while also being scheme diverse and being able to stop the pass, which is usually tough with three linebackers on the field. So they've been lining up in the nickel 3-3-5, which is three down linemen, three linebackers, and then five defensive backs. What they've been doing out of that is generating pressure less with loops and stunts, but with more just straight blitzing. So they were bringing a lot of pressure. You probably noticed it early in the game. Like right up the middle, they were bringing linebackers and also bringing safeties on occasion. The problem with that to generate pressure is it does leave your back end a little exposed, and everyone's going to be one-on-one for the most part. A big issue that Tampa had is when you do blitz, one of the TDs they gave up was against Julio Jones, and Ryan Smith fell down one of, I don't know,
three times.
Four or five times throughout the game. Yeah. And, you know, if you're blitzing and you're leaving a guy who continually falls down, and I don't think Ryan Smith is a bad player, but he falls down a lot. When you're leaving guys like that one-on-one against, you know, players the caliber of Julio Jones or just any number one or number two wide receiver, it's a risky proposition. So it worked a handful of times for the Bucks, and they forced, you know, either a three and out or you know, a punt on a third down. But, you know, at the same time, it also, you know, they gave up a few touchdowns like that. So it's really a tough situation for Mike Smith to try and play zone defense, which fits this personnel with a very limited pass rush. So he's pretty much in a really tough spot. I don't think he's a bad coach at all, but it's a really tough predicament for, you know, anybody calling plays to do with this personnel that's healthy right now.
Now, let's talk about that. Mike Smith, not a bad coach. I think that is true simply by his tenure and what he's done over the years. Now, it's not true based on what he has put on the field and his seeming unwillingness to be more aggressive. You're the general manager, or you're the owners. Whoever gets to make decisions in this organization, maybe it's the janitor, I don't know. Whoever gets to make the call. Yep. Who are you keeping? Who are you losing if the season ends today? They don't do anything in Green Bay to redeem themselves. The season ends today. Donald Trump does what we expect, and North Korea does something stupid. Season's over.
Yeah. All right. So I'd like to bring Brent Grimes back on a team-friendly contract similar to the one he has now. I like Justin Smith as one of the – or Justin Evans as one of the starting safeties. The other safety, I would let T.J. Ward go. I don't think he's really been very good as a free agent signing. And he's also – I don't want to say he's been a locker room cancer, but he has complained a lot about his playing time. And then when he's been on the field, I don't think he's produced. And that's kind of tough to say. He was a huge signing for me personally. I've always really liked T.J. Ward. I thought he'd be really good here. I like to see Keith Tandy get a little bit more time. Chris Conte, I think, is a fair rotational safety. I don't think he's starter material. But, you know, as a reserve safety, I think he's completely fine. Definitely keep Ryan Smith. I would like to see him continue to develop. Vernon Hargraves, I thought, did some really good things in the past few games before he got hurt, both at nickel and the one game he played outside. I'd like to have him try another his hand again at the outside as a corner. Inside is where you get a little bit more turnover for me. So looking at the tape and also thinking about our personnel, as I've mentioned, the strength of this team is the linebacking core. The Bucs are going to do best when they have their, you know, three main linebackers, Beckwith, Kwan, and Levante on the field together. The problem with Tampa, looking back at the past, you know, since really the Super Bowl run, has been their commitment to the 4-3 and their lack of finding an edge pass rusher like Simeon Rice. You know, Simeon Rice probably, you know, will go to the Hall of Fame one day, maybe not this year. But, you know, they've swung and missed continually on, you know, Gaines Adams, Daquan Bowers, Adrian Claiborne, guys that they are bringing in to rush the edge in what is also becoming a little bit of a dying breed in terms of college football. You're seeing a lot more 3-4 defenses. I actually think it would benefit Tampa, and it pains me to say this because I love the 4-3, and I've never liked the 3-4, but I think Tampa would actually be better suited in a 3-4, and that's where I think you could see Kwan and Levante both play inside linebacker in a 3-4 and really utilize their speed, because they cannot be blocked by pulling guards. They are too fast. So I think if you can get a really big front three to kind of clog up the middle and maybe get some pass rush, like if we had Gerald McCoy playing 3-4 end, a 5 technique, which he did a fair amount in college, I would point out, we would need to draft or sign a nose tackle. I don't think Chris Baker has been very good this year. He's made some plays, but he's also missed a lot of other plays. Clinton McDonald would be nice as maybe a reserve. Will Golston, I'd definitely be willing to give a shot for at the opposite 5 technique, even though he is a little bit undersized weight-wise right now, but I'm sure he can get up. I think he was like 285, 290 back in the Shiano days. But I would be interested to see the team move that way and either draft a nose tackle fairly high, or I wouldn't count on Stevie T, a 7th-round pick, you know, solving all of our problems at that. But I would like to see the Bucs do that. I know Dontari Poe from the Chiefs is a free agent who's only 27 years old, and then I'm sure there are going to be a bunch of other guys in the draft and also draft maybe another edge rusher and move Noah Spence to outside linebacker to also rush the passer off the edge, which he did in college in a 3-4 too.
Well, so, it'll be interesting to see. I don't understand why people get sort of religiously attached to a scheme. You definitely do have groceries that lead you to a scheme. And in the chat room right now, Pinnacle's bringing up when McCoy said he's not going to move to nose tackle when it looked like Donald may be an option for us. Players talk, coaches talk, lots of people talk shit. If you want to get paid, you go where you're told to go. If you don't want to go where you're told to go, and that's what you want to do, I don't care if you're Gerald McCoy or not, then there's another place you can go, and it's the door, right? So if the right direction is to go 3-4 or to go with a more predominantly a three bigs front, whether it's a 3-4 or the 3-3-5 that they've implemented now, then that's what you do. I agree. We've got linebacker depth. We've got linebacker-like guys we keep trying to make defensive linemen out of. I don't understand it. It's very, very strange. All right, listen. Steven, I appreciate you joining the show. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Green Bay. We're going to move on and start talking a little bit about this week. Do you have any scouting things you want to tell us about, or you want to just save that for maybe after the Green Bay game?
I haven't scouted Green Bay at all. I've seen some videos online. They do a lot of screen passes, so I think the Bucs are really prepared for that type of game plan. It'll be interesting. They run a lot of RPOs, run pass options. So it'll be a good test for the linebackers to make sure they're disciplined. Love to see Quan growing in his discipline. I think the Bucs are in a good spot. Hundley had a good game last week, so we'll see if the Bucs can carry it over. And I thought they gave really good effort that last week. And now that, you know, the playoffs are out of the picture and wins and losses are a little bit less important, I think the most important thing is to see effort from these guys. I think we saw that last week. It'll be interesting to see what type of game plan they come out with this week. I actually thought they had a great game plan against Atlanta. They threw a pass on first down and then ran it six straight times. Doug Martin's injury kind of hampered things. Hopefully he's back healthy this week. I know he's missed practice today, but I'm interested to see what type of game plan the Bucs come out with Jameis coming back. So
well,
hopefully it'll be a good game. And
We'll see this week, and I'll see you up in Green Bay. Hopefully I'll see you Saturday night, and I'll definitely see you Sunday. Steven, that's at Che, C-H-E-A-H underscore say. If you are not following him, please crawl out of the rock you're staying under and follow his film reviews. Where else can they get your stuff, Steven?
Right now, it is just my Twitter, but there will be some things coming forward in the next couple weeks and months. So stay tuned. I'll definitely announce it on Twitter.
Very cool. Well, we will follow you on Twitter, Steven. I'll see you this weekend, my friend. Thanks for joining the show.
All right. Thanks for having me, Derek. See you this weekend.
All right. Take care, brother. That is Steven Che of at Che underscore say. Great film review. And I love that you guys are watching more film. I love that he's watching film. I love the my man Real Bucks Talk is doing the film work as well. Everyone's doing it, which is good. So, you know, it's funny. I won't have any What the Buck shirts. I don't think I can get any made before I come up there. We've done a shitty job of merchandising. A lot of other groups are doing a great job of merchandising. Hats off to those guys, the Buckaholics and the Stick Carriers and all those guys. We've done shirts for years, and I don't know whether it's just not in our DNA to be overly aggressive about that stuff or what, but we just haven't done a very good job of it. So I apologize. I don't have any. I may see if I can get a run made, but I don't think I could get it made before I got up there. So, no, I probably won't, man. I suck. And the online store sucks because I never did that either. So that's all on me. That's on no one else's issues. Pinnacle, I hear your point. A lot of folks in the chat room are worried about Jameis and the accusations. They do not need to be substantiated for a suspension to be levied. The NFL can certainly operate in dictatorial fashion. The Players Association can defend Jameis. I'm happy that Jameis feels as though he is going to be exonerated. To be honest, worrying about that to me is like worrying about, you know, again, worrying about what's going on in North Korea. We can't impact it. So Jameis is just going to do what he's supposed to do. I wish we knew who the third person was, but at the end of the day, I also wish I knew who was on the grassy knoll. I would rather see him go out there and throw for 450 yards, four touchdowns and no interceptions, and do that for the rest of the year and then worry about a suspension down the road. Right, because if he actually did what he's accused of doing, then he sucks, and that's an issue that we have to deal with. If he didn't do it, then it sucks that he was dragged into it, and we have to deal with that too. So we'll see what's going on with all that. That doesn't really impact me. Let's talk a little bit about the Packers. So the Packers have an offense that, despite using Brent Hundley, does seem to be able to move the ball. He had a great game last week. They've got Davante Adams. They've got the ability to throw the ball through the air. The Steelers know that. They could tell us about it quite a bit. On the flip side of the Packers, they don't defend the pass very well either. So Jameis, whether it was Jameis or Ryan, those guys should be able to move the ball through the air, assuming we can give them time to throw. This will be tricky because the Packers do like to bring pressure up the middle the same way we seem to like to do now. So with the changes that are going on in the center of our offensive line, that offensive line is going to have to work well together to make sure that they're able to pick up those blitzes and give Jameis time to distribute the ball if we choose not to run. And if we run, we are going to be running with the running backs that everyone else seems to want who's following the Doug Martin sucks narrative that I don't think is backed up by any film or any other data that means anything about football. But again, I don't think that really matters to a lot of those people because it's soap opera to them. So we will get a chance to see Jacquizz Rodgers and Peyton Barber, probably some Charles Sims because they insist on trying to run him as well. But they'll be running behind this patchwork makeshift offensive line that I'm telling you, I have a sinking suspicion might surprise some people. I think it's going to be a nasty road grading group. I think it'll be interesting to see whether Coach Cutter can see what they do together and then take advantage of those things that they do. And that's going to be the secret sauce, I think, is that he's going to have to see what they're capable of doing and then adjust his game plan to either go to quicker releases, three-step drops, move the pocket, which we don't seem to do ever. I don't understand. You know, leverage chips, we did some of that last week. We're doing a little bit more of that, which is good. But here we go to Green Bay. The Green Bay weather is not a big deal. I talked to Cheryl today. She's not even wearing a jacket up there. So much for the frozen tundra. It's going to be in the 40s, which means that as a fat guy, I will be wearing, like, I don't know, a thong. You can still come to the game. It won't be that. It'll probably just be shorts. But the right side of the offensive line concerns you. Lack of running game, KRS. What are you talking about there? I think the running game is going to be there. You just got to hand the ball off a lot. That's the thing. You got to commit to a running game. And you can't just always make it predictable runs. And for fuck's sake, take that toss sweep shit out of the playbook. We don't run it well. We don't have the personnel to run it. Why do we insist on running that play? Like I said on Twitter during the game, if we're doing that to set up enough tape that we're going to fake that and go reverse, maybe. But you talk about the longest long con ever. Shit, that guy in Lost that ran the long con didn't run cons that long. Pinnacle, I hear what you're saying about Winston and quick throws. I think we make those more complicated than we need to. We seem to go into trips bunch and we stack and we get people doubles close to the line and we clump everybody up. We don't spread. I think Winston would be fine with quick releases if we spread those guys out. But on the running game, I think you go ISOs and powers and things like that. I have no problem with the jet sweep we run every once in a while. I don't know why we ran it with Speedy Reedy instead of DeSean Jackson. I think running with DeSean Jackson is good. I think you got to run that 3 or 4 times a game, even as a decoy. They've got to stay home with DeSean. If they don't, they're going to get beat. So you got to be able to do that so that the defense has they have to study it. They have to make sure that they're staying disciplined. And when you see that on film, if you run it and you go with the fake to the jet and you go with the dive or whatever on the other side and they don't stay home, then you get that on film, right? And then you come back and you run it again. And bend around. That's funny. I don't know why we don't go spread more often, though Cutter seems to go spread when it makes the least sense. So it's a timing thing in a lot of ways. Let's talk a little bit about the Falcons game. My skull for that game goes to Dirk Cutter. I still stand by the fact that I think coaches need 5 years, which means that I don't give a shit who the coaches are right now. I don't agree with Mark's analogy of if I get married 3 times, I got to keep picking the wrong person. I think if you get married 3 times and you get divorced 3 times, the problem may not be the other 3 people. The problem may be you. So at this point, I think the problem may be the organization, and we need to give someone some time to help this organization grow past that. And that takes patience. That takes perseverance. That takes setting people on IR to get healthy for next year, admitting when the season is essentially over, and figuring out what it is that we have on staff. What do we have in the cupboards? Evaluate these guys. Get deep into the roster, man. Yes, escalate these guys from practice squad. See what the fuck they can do. Give them some burn. See what they do in a real game. Sword for O.J. Howard. I like that, KRS. I had the sword going to Pat Murray because I'm with Chris. I think Pat Murray gets a sword every game for the rest of the year as long as he kicks. So, when it comes to Dirk Cutter, this is just painful because I know he is smart. I know he understands offense. I don't understand what he's doing. I don't think that giving the play calling to Monken or anyone else makes this any better. I do think that having a game manager that can handle things like strategy and things matters, right? That's certainly important. Bobo Wilson being escalated is funny. You know I liked Bobo early. I didn't like some of the attitude bullshit, but Edge is fine, fast, good hands. The quarterbacks don't seem to give a shit what jersey number you have. They did try to force it to Deshaun too much because we got too fixated on the fact that we bought a shiny new toy and we had to try and use it more often, which was just dumb and immature and bad leadership. You got a great toy in Mike Evans. Feed him the ball. So if Bobo's out there, I expect him to get touches. I don't know why the tight ends get ignored for just entire quarters or halves at a time, whether it's Cam or O.J. Howard. Or Eau Claire, right? I mean, we had that conversation last week. I got into a fun and heated discussion with Ren Dax of the PewterCast podcast when they dropped Stalker, because I get what they're doing, right? This is rebuild. This is see what we got. They know what they had in Stalker. They don't want to move forward. I don't even lose any sleep over that, right? If you go then use the other guy, right? Find out what you got. They liked Eau Claire coming out of Canada. So go see if he's the athletic guy that you think he is. Go see if he can, you know, mash heads the way you think he can. I'm all right with that. But let's not call it anything that it is. Eau Claire didn't outplay Stalker. Stop it. But I don't understand, and it's in the chat room right now, why the hell we just forget about tight ends. It's one of our best positions. And not just because you guys know that I love tight ends. On the keys to the game, you know, at this point, it's just aggression. See who can do their job. Make sure Ryan Smith can stay on his fucking feet. Get this kid some cleats. It's not cleats. It's leverage. He's getting his hips out. That's something that should be worked on in practice. It's funny. We all think running is easy. Running at that level is different, guys. It really is. So we'll see if they can get that fixed up. Predictive MVPs on offense. I'm gonna go ahead and go fanboy on it and hope for a soap opera like return of Jameis Winston, because I am a Jameis guy. I love the kid. I love what he does. I think all these folks who are now saying he's not a franchise quarterback are absolutely out of their fucking trees. All of that is gated by the fact that I hope he did not do what he was accused of. Right? That's not the character that I know him to be. The guy that I see take snaps is someone who I think can develop into a great franchise quarterback. Yes, I understand that people are going to say the Carson, the Wentzes, and the Goffs, and all these guys are doing better right now. Please extend your lens of football analysis. That's the same shit you guys were telling me about RG3 when he had a good year. And now where is he? I think he's working at Arby's. You've got to look past some of that stuff. That's not saying that Wentz and Goff aren't doing great things. What it is saying is that we have a unique talent here and a unique leader. That doesn't mean he can be the only leader. One of the things that's also caused a problem is he's had to do too much, too fast, by himself. Sword to the weather in Tampa Bay from Adam. Nice. Score this week. Fuck, I don't know. I keep calling scores that are high. I called the score last week, I think, or very close to it. It just was inverted because I always pick us to win. He's managing at Arby's. My bad. That's a good education he got, though. I know he got ruined by the coach, by the way. I liked RG3. I still like RG3's talent. I think when you rip someone's leg off and beat them with it, that's a problem. And that's really what they did. So what do you question, Pinnacle? I don't live in trees. I'm one of those guys. I don't know what you're talking about. Let me know what you're talking about. I'll go back to it. And Arby's is awesome. They do have the meats. Well said. And they're not a sponsor, so we're not talking about it very much. KRS says Bucks 21, Green Bay 10. Adam says 29-19, Tampa Bay. Too much too soon. Oh, on the Jameis front. I like that. It's like your opinion, man. Way to go with the dude line. I love it, Flint Town. I'm going to go with 24-17. Jameis has a great game. Defense gets a score. Winston had to do too much too soon. Yes, I think Winston had to do too much too soon as a leader. Bucks Princess brings up a good point. I think she has lost every game she's ever gone to, and that makes me sad because I wish they could win for Bucks Princess because she travels all over the country to see them, and I think she's pretty cool. But I don't know where she's sitting in the game. What I will promise I will do is if it looks like we have a chance to win, I will escort her out of the stadium, then I'll come back in and watch, and then she can watch from a TV outside. So it's not true. That's fine. I made all that up. But Pinnacle, that's my point on Winston. I do think he had to do too much from a leadership perspective as a young man. I don't think that he didn't feel he was capable of it, but I think with that amount of pressure on top of all of the other things, it was asking too much. You didn't have Lavonte David doing what he's doing now. I think that's the best thing that's come out of this. Lavonte David has stepped up as a fucking leader because he is one. He is one on the field. He can be one in the locker room. Quan tried to. Quan talked all the talk, and then Quan couldn't back it up yet. That doesn't mean he's not going to. I love Quan Alexander. I think he'd be freaking phenomenal. but too much talk without all the other stuff. Now he's doing the other stuff. Now we can get the talking. What's up, Oversell? So it doesn't have to be one leader. You've got to have that come. You got to have the different kinds of leaders. Like back in the old days when you had the secondary back here with the Rondé Barbers and the Brian Kellys, there were different kinds of leaders back then. We have to get that back. And no, this means nothing about whether someone smiles or not, because that narrative is stupid too. So, no W's. And everyone's really fixated on that W's thing. I mean, listen, how many times have you guys given a pregame speech? You know how hard it is to give pregame speeches that are interesting? He took a shot and missed. Get the fuck over it. I don't get it. Not you, Rick. I'm not mad at you. It's just crazy. I don't think that is Winston, to be honest, Pinnacle, based on what I saw out of him in college and what I read about him in high school. So, I think he is a guy that's going to go out there and try and lead. And sometimes you need vocal leaders and sometimes you need quiet leaders, right? People used to yell at Josh Freeman because he didn't get vocal enough. And then he grabbed a guy's face mask. They're like, why are you grabbing a guy's face mask? This is the thing that happens, guys. If I did, you are free to laugh at it. I don't know. Hold on a second. Let me see what's in the chat room. And this is the thing that some people don't like about the chat room because I go back. Can whoever is doing the pregame, I'm not sure what that is. Sorry, Rick Hage. Let me know what you're trying to say. We make this soap opera, guys, because we watch it under such a microscope. 24-hour news cycle, 73 podcasts, 15 different Twitter feeds that everyone's following, rumors and suppositions and hints and allegations. It is amazing the microscope we put this stuff under. Everyone take a step back if you can. We'll see what happens this week. As a fan, I'm going up there. I'm hoping I get a chance to see a win because I haven't seen many of them. I'd love to celebrate. Shut down dash R now. You're talking about Jameis? I was like, that's a command. My man's in here working in the chat room. Very nice. It is a Bucks family. I like that too. All right, let's talk about schedule. Heading to Green Bay Saturday. A reminder, the Buckaholics event is Saturday night, and that is 5:30 to 11, Stadium View Sports Bar. So make sure you get out there. It is okay to laugh. I just don't understand why people fixate on it, Rick. I know what you're talking about. So we'll be out there. And then follow on Twitter all the folks who are going to be out there. We're going to try and get together for the game as well. We'll be back with Detroit. You guys know what we do here. We'll let you guys know what's going on for the Buccaneers family out there. Can't wait to see you. I know you guys, a lot of people have been tweeting me, hey, where's the tailgate? Where's the tailgate? Dog, it's not our barbecue. We're not throwing a tailgate out there. We don't have the place. We're not doing it on the mobile side. We didn't mobilize like the Buckaholics to get up to the Upper Peninsula. I don't even think they have power up there, to be honest. I think we're going to just burn things. But we'll find some place to get together and have some drinks and have some food and have some fun and then hopefully go in and watch the Buccaneers win a game. So thank you for tuning in this week. Appreciate you guys coming back. Appreciate everyone who follows the podcast. Anyone who's ever given us a rating over time. It's funny, I realized the other day when I see other people like posting their podcasts in 16 other groups and retweeting this, that, and the other, doing really good things on social media, by the way. I'm not making fun of any of that. That is exactly how you spread your content. I guess that it's just been long enough that I don't really give a shit anymore because I don't do any of that. So I appreciate you guys who are here, who've been here for a long time. It's good to have people that I've known for over a decade that many of whom I've not met. So if I have a chance to see you in Green Bay, great. We'll get together and have a beer. I'm definitely looking forward to meeting the folks on Saturday night. I don't give a shit how late I get there. I hope that place stays open late. And if it doesn't, we need to find a dive somewhere near there that does because I plan on drinking Saturday night. As if it were a job, I guess. So, go Bucks. Thanks to everyone on the crew. Thanks to all of our listeners. And we will see you guys next week, or I'll see you this weekend, and I'll see you next week on the podcast. Go Bucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scoo! Scoo!
Yeah. Well, like bugs running, man, I think that's all, folks. My man, Oaks, just shut down another show. Same day, same time for the past 11 years. Guess what? Next week, we gon' be right here. Talking about the Bucks and having a good time. We give it to you straight, no need to be between the lines. The beat drop hard every time I hit the nine. And if you didn't know it, this is Franco on the rhymes. Yeah. 11 years strong, y'all. It's the What the Buck podcast. My man, Derek, they call him old school. Yeah.
Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck.